Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Sort of in the dark here, I noticed, in New York. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Three games against the Mets coming up. Just won three in a row after dropping the opener in Atlanta. Ryan, what are your thoughts?
This is the team we thought we were getting 2 weeks ago. Playing well, delivering. You know, it's funny. It's not necessarily the superstars, which gets me into the first topic here. Sunday night was Nelson Cruz show. Six RBIs. He leads the team with nine RBIs, despite playing in, what, less than half their games? I mean, he's been the pleasant surprise for me, at least in the first couple weeks of the season. What is working?
Yeah, that's it, right? Like Manny, okay, Manny goes whatever. He had a bloop single last night, and he was, what, 3-for-5? Juan Soto's gone 2-for-4 the last two nights. They really haven't come through, like, very much at all. Mm-hmm. And the Padres are 6-4, right? It's because of guys like Seth Lugo. It's because of Trent Grisham, Ha-Sung Kim, Jake Cronenworth, and last night, Nelson Cruz. Of course, Nelson Cruz has he had six RBI last night. He has nine RBIs in his last three games, which covers the Padres' last five games. Right. Almost a full third of their runs driven in that time. Yeah, look, we should dive into this Nelson Cruz. We should get preemptive on it, right?
Right.
Because like last night, Bob Melvin was asked, is there a way he earns more playing time, right? Like his first home run was in place of Manny Machado on Tuesday when Manny Machado was ejected, and it was off of a right-hander. Wow. Hey, you think Nelson Cruz could play more? Well, sure, if you didn't have 5.5 months left in the season and he weren't 42.
Right. Right. No, that's a great point. And, you know, I think, too, with him, maybe part of the success is that they're putting him in a position to succeed. Right.
I mean,
he's facing left-handers. He's hitting, I think, in the order where you would want a pleasant surprise guy to hit. That's what makes this to me so delightful. And I'm using the word delightful on purpose. This is not a guy who I expected to do a whole lot. This is somebody who, I mean, again, disappeared for the World Baseball Classic, right? Disappeared. Yeah. We saw a lot of Matt Carpenter for 2 weeks in spring training. And I think that sort of internally, maybe the expectations were whatever Nelson Cruz can give you is a bonus. And to see him carrying the load against a really good Atlanta Braves team, again, just to me, one of the big surprises so far.
That's a part of one of the aspects of this whole philosophy of building this team is sure. You build it with a lot of players. What happened in 2021? You know, Manny Machado was pretty good. Fernando Tatis Jr. was MVP worthy numbers, and they were below 500.
Yeah.
What happened last year, Manny Machado was basically MVP-ish the entire year. And they had to get hot late to, you know, I thought they were going to be in the playoffs the whole time. That had more to do with the fact there's not a lot of competition.
Right.
But we all know what happened last year. They were kind of a middling team until the end. If you want to have the kind of team that plays well, I'm not talking about 105 wins, but a team that plays well all year and knows how to win, then it's a team that has a bunch of different guys picking it up, like the bottom of the order or, gosh, wherever Trent Grisham is hitting, what he's doing right now with three home runs, with getting on base every game, what Jake Cronenworth does kind of all the time, what Ha-Sung Kim has started the season by doing. Yes, yes. If they're a championship team, it's because they have Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado, Juan Soto, and Fernando Tatis Jr. And, you know, three of the four had really good years.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guys, the other guys are very important.
You need contributions from obviously everybody in the lineup. You had a great note today. And Kevin, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Chris DeNorfia, Seth Smith platoon. This may be a little, you may be on the chart. You may have been on the chart.
Yes, but I'm old enough.
You're old enough.
But
okay.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the Padres in their history have had some platoons. Or you look at them and you go, yeah, if we're considering them as one entity, that's a really good entity, right? The Chris DeDorfia, Seth Smith thing was they were an all-star outfielder combined, right?
Yeah.
I saw in your excellent Padres Daily newsletter today, you laid out the numbers from both Matt Carpenter and Nelson Cruz so far this season. That's an all-star at DH if you combine the two guys, right? If they can keep this up, and again, small sample size, if they can keep this up, this is found money for the Padres.
And here's the thing. I don't know off the top of my head where the Denorfia Smith platoon had to fit in, right? But I don't think it was as the fifth or sixth or seventh best player in the lineup. I think
they were hitting second. Yeah, or first. And
see, that's the thing about this is that's why you have four superstars, and that's why you do take a flyer on Nelson Cruz.
Right.
Is, wow, if this works, then, you know, again, he is 42 and we are 10 games into the season. I happen to love watching a 42-year-old man, that'd be 10 years younger than me, succeed at this level. And he is a good man, it seems to me, based on 2 months of having been around him at all. Mm-hmm. And he is a good teammate, which is obviously far more important than what I think of him personally. And it is remarkable what he has done through 10 games.
No, Nelson Cruz is older than me, Kevin.
Really?
He is older than me by 1 day. I looked it up this morning. Because
so if you had homered last night, then you would have missed by 2 days being the oldest Padre to ever homer. Because
yes, exactly.
I believe
yes,
that was it, that Nelson Cruz is 1 day younger than Ricky Henderson was when he had his final home run for the Padres in 2001.
That's crazy.
So you could have been right there. How frustrating would that have been for you to be 2 days away from that distinction? Wow.
Nah, I know. But it's crazy. It's, yeah, when I was reading today, I was like, wait a minute. I'm like 42 and whatever it was days. Let's do some math. And so
do you
yeah,
keep track of how many days you are?
No. But when I was reading you writing about Nelson Cruz, I was like, wait a minute. That would be his birthday in July.
Head, you know?
Yeah. And so anyway, yeah, he's 1 day older than me.
I'm 42 and a half. Cool. You still do that?
Like Oh, yeah. 42 yeah. and a half, even though my birthday is in July. Yeah.
42
and a half. He joked to you, Kevin, that, you know, he can play anywhere they need him. Shortstop, right field. He can close, whatever. Nelson Cruz. The Padres need a right fielder.
Okay.
David, at least for a week.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. David Dahl is on the injured list. They called up Murrieta's Brandon Dixon. Brandon Dixon does not play the outfield, really. There's an opportunity here if they wanted to push their luck with Nelson Cruz to put him in right field. Do they push their luck?
Don't you think that's the phrase that push their luck? I mean,
yes.
Like, yes. I mean, are you going to argue that Nelson Cruz is going to be a better defender than Brandon Dixon out there? No. Does he have potentially a better bat? Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You built a team that should be able to withstand a 0-for-4 or a 1-for-4 from Brandon Dixon.
Right.
It's nice. It's a nice thing to consider. It would be really cool to see. Hey, way to go, Nelson.
Right.
It seems to me to be pushing your luck.
Yeah, and you also don't want to run the risk of Nelson Cruz getting hurt. I mean, his role, he signed with this team knowing exactly what the expectation was, which is to platoon at DH. That's a big difference from everyday right fielder.
And Bob Melvin is sure to say, and Bob Melvin does make sure to get his message out both when he speaks to players and he speaks to them frequently and then also publicly. Mm-hmm. And sure to say that one of the things, if not the thing that he has enjoyed the most besides seeing them perform, is that both of these guys do know their roles and are here chasing a ring.
Sure.
Right. And so if that means that they play in 40 games, right, and do their part for a team that wins a championship at their age, right? Like a lot of times you're like, okay, I'll take your word for it. You're not like you didn't go for the biggest contract or it was just a coincidence that the team that gave you the biggest contract was also the one that, gave you the best chance in the World Series.
Right.
But when you're talking about a 42-year-old and a 37-year-old who have been around, it's a little easier to believe that, you know what, they're chasing a ring and they're going to be fine with their role. I do believe the Padres deal or offer was the best for Matt Carpenter. There were other $1 million and more actually deals out there for Nelson Cruz. He took the one for the team that was going to help him get the thing that he lacks.
Sure. Kevin, before I took this job, I was just a guy and watching the Padres on TV. And last summer, I really fell in love with the way Jose Azokar played. Elite outfielder, gets some of the best jumps in baseball. Sometimes struggles at the plate. Sometimes, I mean, we've seen some of the bunting choices even so far earlier this year. But I think that this is a guy who is an elite level defender and a pretty darn good base runner. at some point, should he just play right field until Fernando Tatis shows up?
I would swap that he's a borderline elite base runner and a pretty good outfielder. Okay. The jump's good. The route's sometimes not. He's a young player. But sure. I'm splitting hairs with you.
But he does those two things pretty well. Yeah.
Yes. You are getting good at bats against right-handed pitchers from Rougned Odor. You are. And so what are you losing out there in the outfield is the question you're asking yourself if they're the Padres. And I think it's the question you're asking here. And Rougned Odor the other day, both the last two times he started in right has eventually been replaced by Jose Azokar. Mm-hmm. Last game, it was Azokar going into right field and Odor coming in to play second. So Matt Carpenter could come out of the game and Jake Cronenworth could slide over. I mean, this is an incredibly versatile team. Mm-hmm. If they were to send Azokar out there every time they faced a lefty before Tatis returns, absolutely. Mm-hmm. If they were to send Azokar out there when they face a lefty and Tatis DHs because somebody's getting a day off, I think that very well probably is what you're going to see. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I mean, they're playing in New York. Started, and we should probably talk about the Mets at some point.
Okay, sure. Especially tonight's, we don't get Joe, but we get a rematch of Game One. I don't think any of us remember Game One after what Joe Musgrove did in Game Three. But we get Yu Darvish, Max Scherzer tonight.
Right, and where's Josh Bell? Is he going to show up to save the Padres or no? No, he's in Cleveland,
right?
So, he's in Cleveland. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, you look at the next, at least between now and the time Tatis returns. You're looking at games basically just in New York and at Petco, correct? Mm-hmm. Two pretty big outfields if you're a right fielder.
Yes. Fair? Yes. Hey, fair.
I don't know.
You've got Trent Grisham out there trying to maybe trying to make sure that he gets to some balls in the left center gap.
Right.
But you've got a guy who's very rangy out there in center field. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And look, they only face one left-hander. And yes. Great point, Ryan. Rougned Odor, this guy, if you know his background, coming from Venezuela, baseball family, you know the guy's a fighter. You know the guy is, a baseball guy, mm-hmm. and that's great. He still probably shouldn't be in right field in crucial situations. Right. So, you make a good point. Azokar is a middling hitter against lefties and a not very good hitter who feels like he has to bunt, right, against righties. And so – we're quibbling and it's hey, this is what we do over 10 games.
Right.
Where it's almost like, yes, so much thought. They got five guys who travel with the analytics department with them, figuring all this stuff out. In addition to the baseball personnel department and all the coaches, mm-hmm. they spend a lot of time quibbling too, but it's 10 games where flip a coin, put someone out in right field.
Right. Well, and I think that Rougned Odor has earned a spot on this roster.
Heck yeah.
Probably just not as a platooning outfielder.
And he will not, right, exactly. And he will not be, other than he does give you that lefty thing if Tatis is, whatever. They have a lot of versatility, and that's really cool that he has been added there. But what he does is when Tatis comes back, Odor is your guy when you want to do something like you're taking Carpenter out for defensive purposes and moving Cronenworth over. To play first.
Sure. Kevin, we just talked about some guys who are kind of, fringy stuff. We just got nice and dorky talking about the right field situation.
I'm comfortable.
You don't have to be a dork to get on board with Mets Padres.
Yeah.
I mean, Scherzer Darvish, a rematch of last year's wild card series. I mean, this is big boy baseball starting tonight. You excited? What do you expect from the Mets?
Yeah, I am excited, and I'm trying to figure out how I can legitimize this whole thing of, hey, it's a rematch, because, both the teams got their own problems now. Both these teams have moved on. But let's look at this from the Padres' perspective and the perspective of the Padres fan. Like, that was a quintessential, pivotal, earth-moving moment those 3 days in New York. And so to be coming back this soon after, to be facing Scherzer, if you look, Scherzer finds something to get himself riled up about all the time.
Oh,
it could
yeah.
be a shirt that somebody wore, right? Like that he saw and whatever, right? And so if you don't think it's going to be in his mind, not that Scherzer is trying to win this because that would make up. No, but in the great competitor's mind, there is something that gets you going. And for him, he was embarrassed in game one. He and Jacob deGrom were made for that series, and he didn't get his job done. Bell, Trent Grisham, you know. So yes, this will be what, and you got Darvish coming back, and after kind of maybe this is the real start of his season. Maybe it'll be another one. We'll see what he does tonight. But you know you're going to get a capable. This is nice. What they got from Seth Lugo yesterday, you can be fairly certain you're going to get 5-6. From Darvish, and I only say 5 because it's, you know, at this point in what has been a wacky spring for him, a wacky few months.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I'm fired up. Pete Alonso has 5 homers. Lindor and McNeil not hitting great, but they got 3 doubles. Starlin Marte, of course, already, you know, hitting well. Mm-hmm. The usual suspects in their lineup. I think what they got the lefty. Hold on. They got the lefty, David Peterson, going tomorrow, and then righty Tyler McGill. The Padres have faced a little bit. It'll be Weathers for the Padres tomorrow against Peterson, and Snell on Wednesday against McGill.
You don't have to look far to find superstars on both of these rosters.
I want to answer to my contention about this series. I think that anyone listening knows, but I do like to remind the folks that you are a San Diego native. You watched as much Padre baseball over the time that you were out of town. That series, briefly, you can get a little loquacious, Ryan. You know, briefly, put that series in perspective for me.
I mean, the Joe Musgrove thing was incredible, but it was game one where, you know, you sit there and you go, well, yeah, this team has a chance. And, you know, Josh Bell, I made a joke about Josh Bell earlier. That home run from Josh Bell, to me, showed that the Mets had some flaws. And it was huge. I mean, if we're talking big moments in the season, it's not a top 3 moment. It's a top 10 moment in their season.
Shocked the crowd, shocked Scherzer, shocked the Padres. Yeah. Like, just in terms of, okay, here we go.
And for of all the guys.
You can turn this crowd on the Mets. In a second,
right.
And especially in the postseason, these people get a little nuts. So, yeah.
Yeah, and of all the guys to do it too, right? It wasn't just that you know, if Manny Machado went deep, that'd be one thing. But, you know, it was a hell of a pitch. If I remember correctly, fastball high, right?
Yep.
And Bell, I mean, destroyed it.
Things that he didn't do all August or September, absolutely.
Right. So to me, I mean, that was huge. And, you know, it's so funny. We all get the Dodgers series was the Dodgers series. The Dodger series, from my perspective, maybe the high point of San Diego Padres baseball in the last 30 years. 1998 included. People forget how clutch that Mets series was, how important that Mets series was.
Dodger series doesn't happen without the Mets series, obviously.
Great point. That is a great point.
It's in New York, which when you're here in October, you realize it's the center of the universe in terms of sports and media.
Sure. Sure. And yeah, and it happened there. And it was a lot of, you know, it changed the Padres season. I think that at that point, when they got past the Mets. Yeah, right.
Sorry,
you could say it was a must-win series. But you could say that when they got past the Mets, the Padres season was officially viewed as a success. Seth Lugo continues to impress me. You in his first outing, you wrote that he was a strike-throwing machine. I sat down in front of ESPN last night and said, okay, machine, show me what you got. And he was really good. He was really good.
Battler last night.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, he works quickly. He's a guy. I'm not sure that it jumps off the his stuff jumps off the page at you, but he jumps off the screen at you.
His curve does. And he was at 88% first strike pitch of a first pitch strike last game, 56 last night. And then he also went, I didn't count it, but he went to 2-1, got to 3 ball counts. This is a really good lineup he's facing. And he got out of it. He got out of it with soft contact most of the time, with some more strikeouts. Man, all spring training, he's just this real placid guy and from the South. Went to this little tiny college, and it's just like, yeah, I knew I could be a starter. Yeah, I wanted to be back being a starter. And that's how he pitches. And I love that. Might not be the best quotes. I love watching it. I mean, it is one thing to watch Scherzer when he's on, DeGrom. Those are marvels of nature. To watch Seth Lugo go six. Seth Lugo, whose stuff doesn't measure up to, you know, Scherzer's waist, right? Anyway.
Right.
And then when Lugo doesn't have his best stuff and he goes for six on a night that if we had a pregame show, like many, like every team does, right? We'd talk about the keys of the game. Mm-hmm. Do you ever notice how often those keys of the game don't have anything to do with the game?
Right.
And yet the team you're covering won or lost or whatever, right? Yesterday was one of those rare games where they needed Lugo to go at least six and they needed their offense to jump on the Braves early and take them out of the game. And that was essentially, you tell me another way they were going to win this game with their bullpen consisting of Tapia, Chris Matt, and maybe Brent Honeywell, because who they don't want to push because of his elbow issues.
Sure.
Maybe Steven Wilson if they had to have a closer, or Tim Hill if they had to have a closer. But basically, Tapia and Chris Matt were their options. So they had to score a lot of runs and have Lugo go deep. And they did it. That was a great game for the Padres.
Yeah, and you're telling me, by the way, Seth Lugo doesn't show back up at Citi Field today, a longtime Met, the team that really wouldn't give him a chance to start. And he shows up with an ERA of 1.5 and a whip of 1.
And they're hurting a little tiny bit. You could say, make the argument, they didn't need Seth Lugo.
Right.
Well, they could use him now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, last thing before we go, and this is kind of esoteric, but I'm in an esoteric mood today.
Wow.
The Padres just proved that they can slug it out with a team that is the favorite to go to the World Series this year. How important is it early on in the season that they show that they can hang with these teams that are also considered among the best in baseball? Because we're going to see that, right? I mean, we're going to see the Mets. A couple weeks after that, we're going to see the Dodgers. Because I find it significant, but I'm not with the team every day.
Okay. I want to see it happen again here before I say, oh, wow, that's big. Let's see it happen again here. I want to see him go home and take 3 or 4 against the Brewers or in this, isn't it Brewers Braves, win this homestand. Mm-hmm. I want to see when they go play the Yankees. And then sometime in May, then I'll say, yeah, these early season series could make a difference, because I still have in my mind, there's no way you're going to tell me that you have ever seen in person a better April series than 2021. Padres take 3 of 4 in Dodger Stadium.
Yep.
Tatis homers.
The Trevor Bauer stuff. Yep.
The double play started by Cronenworth. Darvish gutting it out. Weathers gutting it out. It was phenomenal. We thought, 4.5 hour games. Those games were so good that even with the pitch clock, they might have been 4 hours. Sure. Like, it was incredible. And we were convinced this is what it was going to be all season. So as much as I really enjoyed this series, I enjoyed Game 1, Game 2, Game 3. They were just battles. Mm-hmm. They really were battles. You can't call April games playoff games, but they were as close as you could come in April. I mean, whatever that means.
Right.
It's April. I'm validating what you're saying. I'm also trying to say, like, hey, let's wait and see, because 3 of 4 against the Braves, you go home and lose 3 of 4 to the Brewers.
Right. Who are you? Yeah. No, it's a great point.
The Brewers? Mm-hmm. They're good, man. I mean, there might be 8 teams in the National League that are good, and the Brewers are one of them. So in this stretch of 24 of 25 to start the season, heck, you know who ends that stretch? The Diamondbacks, who are tied with the Padres for first place after taking 3 of 4 in Los Angeles.
You were the first guy, Kevin. You were the first guy. You said to me in Peoria in March, no, the Diamondbacks are good.
Pitching, defense, on the outfield in particular, and on the bases. So not the formula of these days, but maybe the formula of pitch clock. We'll see, exploiting some things. Yep.
Aggressive base runners, young and athletic. Reminds me of what we thought the Padres of a decade ago were. Yeah.
Don't know that they're not good enough. That happens. Like, you could see this Corbin Carroll. What's the other kid? The Mook kid. I don't know. Yeah. But you could see this young team of the Diamondbacks with the catcher Moreno.
Yep.
sorry, I pay attention to the Padres, and I just, you know, oh, I love Josh Rojas. Yeah. Oh, you could see them being good this year, winning like, you know, 88 games, and next year reverting because people figure them out. Or in the second half of the season, people figuring them out. But right now, the Diamondbacks are young enough to not know that they're not supposed to be in first place. And they do have talent. So I'm telling you, they're a dangerous team. You'd rather play the Diamondbacks maybe later in the season when they're not rocking.
No, that's a great point. That's a great point. Awesome. Well, that'll do it because we're right up on the 30-minute mark here. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, Ryan Finley, we'll see you next time.